Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the magnificent Dora Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Byrne, the Solartopia theme song for the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We have a very powerful and important show today. Unfortunately, a transformer exploded at the Indian Point nuclear plant, between 30 and 40 miles north of Manhattan. And this petrifies me. My entire family, except for one of my daughters and two of my grandsons, was in Muncie, New York, not far from Indian Point when this happened. And I have been on pins and needles ever since. Of course, the powers that be ran the usual recording that there is no danger to the public, no radiation releases, blah, 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 blah. But we all know that these guys are not to be trusted in any way, shape, or form. I have three great guests who have been working for decades to shut Indian Point, as have I. I've been involved with Indian Point for a long, long time, and these two reactors really need to shut, Units 2 and 3. At Indian Point, one of which, by the way, is operating without a license, for God's sake. How many of you out there are driving around in your cars, in your, what is it, 40 years old now, Indian Point, in your cars without a license? It's insane. These reactors are destroying the Hudson River and have been for decades. They are a dagger pointed at the heart of New York City and the entire northeast of the United States, and this is something that we really have to deal with. We have Susan Kito Shapiro with us. Susan, are you with us?
Yeah. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Susan. How are you? Gary, Gary, identify yourself. Gary?
This is Gary Shaw. I'm a member of the Leadership Council of the Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition, and I've been trying to close this plant since the year 2000 when they had a steam generating pipe explosion that released radioactivity into the air and radioactive water right into the Hudson.
And Judy Allen, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm here in Putnam Valley, which is 14 miles from Indian Point, and my Geiger counter that I have upstairs says that so far so good. There's no, it's just regular levels, but you never know.
Well, I want to make one comment, by the way. We've been thinking a lot about this since Fukushima, that the industry loves to talk about background radiation. And what we really need to do when we compare apples with oranges here on background radiation is we need to talk about the atmosphere of this planet before 1945. If we're really going to talk about background radiation, because that was before, of course, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, there was no cesium-137 in the atmosphere of the world before the nuclear bombs and nuclear reactors started operating. But well, that's for another show. So you are all New Yorkers. You're all in the vicinity. Susan Hito Shapiro, you have been working against Indian Point since before time. Why don't you take the lead here and tell us? We're also going to talk about, by the way, not only are we going to talk about this incident, which is a terrible word given the magnitude of what happened, but this not only are we going to talk about this incident at Indian Point, but also about the gas pipeline these lunatics want to build next to this nuclear plant. But let's start from the beginning. Tell us, Susan, exactly what happened in this latest disaster.
Sure. Well, Saturday evening around 6:15 or 6 o'clock, there was a transformer explosion at Indian Point, which caused a large fire that they put out once, and then it came back, and they had to put it out again, and they ended up using quite a bit of this chemical foam to put it out, and now it turns out that there's a lot of foam and actually oil from the transformer in the Hudson River at this point. They went through a hot shutdown, which did cause a short spike of radiation, which is normal whenever there's a hot shutdown.
Tell us about a hot shutdown. That's not something you go see. That's not what you see at a strip club, right? That's something that's serious. Has something serious to do with atomic power and radiation.
Right. So a hot shutdown is when there's an emergency and there's got to be the plant has to be shut down really quickly. And what happens is that they have to release, you know, some radioactive effluent into the air. And so whenever there's an emergency shutdown instead of an orderly 3-day planned shutdown, there's a spike of radiation. And that's just happens when, at any plant where there's a hot shutdown. Now, we've had that happen during Superstorm Sandy and up in Pilgrim in Boston. That happened in the blizzard this year because they had a hot shutdown because they lost off-site power. So this is the same kind of thing. There was a hot shutdown and there was a spike. But the real issue here at Indian Point 3 is where this transformer explosion happened. This was what they called a new transformer, but it turns out it wasn't.
Wait, Susan, before we jump into that, I don't want to lose track.
Okay.
When there's a spike of radiation, what's in it, how much is there, and where does it go?
Well, that's a good question. When there's a spike of radiation, what's normally released every day from a nuclear plant, every day that they operate, they release radioactive cesium-137, iodine-129 and 131. They release tritium constantly, and it cannot be cleaned from the water and other radioactive effluents, and they also are releasing radioactive carbon. They're actually creating new radioactive carbon, which is being released as radioactive CO2 and methane, and that continues every day a plant, from the day fission at a plant starts through all its half-lives until all the fuel is used up.
This BS we're being fed from the nuclear industry about how nuclear reactors are carbon-free is
nonsense.
I want everybody to hear this. Nuclear power plants routinely emit radioactive carbon, and yet all these bozos are running around telling us that nuclear power is carbon-free, right?
Right.
Yes, and that ignores all of the carbon footprint that goes on in the early parts of the fuel cycle, in the late parts of the fuel cycle, and with the safety systems, because when there's an automatic shutdown, they have to have off-site electricity to reinstitute the safety systems. So they have a carbon footprint the entire way of the fuel cycle.
Well, it's
and there's one
carbon.
Other thing that's really important to understand about the carbon. I'm sorry.
More than a carbon footprint, it's a carbon kick in the teeth. And I want everybody to understand,
and
of course our crew in New York here is having spilkies here, these two reactors we're talking about, a transformer explosion, occurred less than 40 miles from Manhattan. And these things are not like pouring out into the Arctic or the Antarctic. They're pouring into the Hudson River. It goes right down under the George Washington Bridge and along the west side of Manhattan. So this is not like some remote area. This is stuff that's pouring into the bodies of our crew in New York and everybody else listening in the New York area and my daughters and grandchildren in Muncie. So let's proceed now. We've had a carbon emission, a radioactive carbon emission, along with the regular carbon emissions leading to global warming. Thank you very much, James Hansen, and all you other people out there who are advocating nuclear as a solution to global warming. So let's proceed from the carbon now.
Harvey, before we do that, let me just make something really clear, which is really important for people to understand, because it's a real game changer. Unlike fossil fuels, which release sequestered carbon that already existed on the planet, nuclear fission makes new carbon, so it changes the carbon balance on the planet. It's a whole different animal. But that's for another conversation. That doesn't have to do with the fire. The fire is what we're talking about today.
All right. So, Gary, do you want to talk about the fire? And then Judy, we'll go round robin here. Thank you for that.
Sure. Well, I'd love to tell you about it, and I would love to say it was the first time it happened, but actually this is the third time in 8 years that they've had the same type of explosion and fire at these transformers. In 2000.
How many transformers are there at Indian Point?
Well, there are two. Indian Point 1 was retired back in 1974, but Indian Point 2 and Indian Point 3 are still operating. As you mentioned, Indian Point 2 is operating without an existing license, and Indian Point 3's license expires in December, but the NRC just allows them to keep going on because they filed their relicensing applications far enough in advance. So Indian Point 2, as far as I know, is the only nuclear plant in the country that doesn't have an operating license.
There are now two transformers, and you say there have been three explosions in the last few years?
That's right.
7 years.
Do they take turns blowing up? I mean, does one blew up last time, now you can blow up this time?
Well, they seem to be rotating, because in 2007 it was Indian Point 3. It had an explosion and a fire. When that happened, the NRC told Entergy that they had to make upgrades and take precautions so that Indian Point 2 would not have it, since it has the same design of transformer, would not have the same issue. So, of course, they did nothing. And in 2010, Indian Point 2's transformer blew up and started a fire, and that's when they also released a whole slew of diesel fuel into the Hudson River. Because of that, New York State fined them $1.2 million for noncompliance. And that
which,
was five,
they, which they passed on to the ratepayers, no doubt.
Actually, probably not, because Indian Point is a merchant. It's not a utility. It's a merchant plant, meaning that it's free market and it's traded publicly. It's not a regulated monopoly. And now 5 years later, Indian Point 3 once again has a blow up and a fire, and this one was particularly disturbing, since it took them two attempts to put out the fire. We have to put that in the context of the fact that. The NRC granted a fire safety exemption to Indian Point several years ago because the fire protection wrap, it's called HEMYC, H-E-M-Y-C, was supposed to protect critical safety cables in the automatic shutdown system, and it was supposed to protect them for at least an hour. And when the NRC actually tested it, and you love this, the NRC told the industry to test it, and the industry told them, screw you, there's not enough evidence that would make us do this. So the NRC tested it themselves and found that it only lasted less than a half an hour. So they reduced the safety factor from over an hour to 24 minutes.
Okay,
it's the only plant in the country.
Let me catch this here. So... I love this. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the sovereign regulatory agency of the United States government, tells the owner of the nuclear plant that they have to upgrade their fire safety. The owner of the plant says, nah, forget it. We don't think there's enough evidence. You can go take a hike.
No. That's not it.
Worse than that.
I was going to say it was kind of like LeBron James telling his coach, the coach in the last game, I know you guys are really fascinated by the NBA, but the coach in the last game told LeBron to take the ball out, to give it to somebody else to shoot. LeBron said, no, I'm going to shoot it. He did shoot it, and they won the game. But you're telling me this is not the same situation.
No, it's not the same. They didn't ask the operator to upgrade anything. They wanted the industry to do the testing on HEMYC because there had been talk that it wasn't sufficient. The NEI... Told the NRC, no.
You gotta say what's the NEI?
Nuclear Energy Institute. It's the main lobbying arm of the nuclear industry.
So the NEI, a lobbying organization, tells a regulatory agency to drop dead.
Pretty much, and you can see it in the Inspector General's report of the NRC if you want to pursue it. But
it took Congress to actually, at 15 years of hearings at Congress, to actually get the NRC to actually test it. They refused to test it as well. They accepted the manufacturer's brochure that said it's good for an hour. No one ever tested it. They were required to. It took 15 years. Senator Dingell and others worked very hard to get that to make that happen, and when they finally did test it, they found out that the fire wrap only worked for 24 minutes. They required the NRC, as opposed to the hour that was advertised in the brochure. And there's a lot of noise.
Let me just explain to you. I'm in Los Angeles, and a helicopter just flew over.
Oh.
So it's part of life in Los Angeles. I'm sorry. But go ahead.
That's okay. And so what happened was the NRC then put an order out all across the industry that anyone, any plant that had the hemic in it had to retrofit and had to fix it to make it work for an hour as required by fire safety law and regulations. Entergy at Indian Point asked for an exemption, and the NRC granted that exemption and said, you know, in secret, in private, we only found about it after it had already happened. It was only announced that it was done after they had already granted it. And
so there were no hearings. There was no outside discussion, no expert witnesses. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, at the urging of a private corporation, Entergy, which owns Indian Point, said, okay, you don't have to have fire protection for an hour. We're going to lower it to 24 minutes because that's how much your stuff works.
Right, and we've started litigation on this in 2007. The actual retrofit would cost probably $500,000, which is
a quarter
of the profit they make a day. They have been fighting this in court. It's gone to the appellate court, back and forth. It's still in court. They've been fighting this instead of retrofitting it. They spent more money on attorneys than fixing it and protecting 20 million people in the New York area. And now we have this fire in the same unit. And in that same, next to that same unit are these two natural gas pipelines that are 36-inch natural gas pipelines with no automatic shutdown. And those are the ones that FERC just approved to be expanded to 42 inches each.
FERC being the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Right. That's
okay,
how crazy the whole thing is. Yeah.
So we have two reactors north of New York City. One of them's not licensed. They can't meet an hour-long fire, shall we say, off-putting. We're down to 24 minutes. So what you're saying is if there's a fire there at either one of these reactors, Indian Point 2 or Indian Point 3, and it lasts more than 24 minutes, we're screwed.
And you'll love this. The regional administrator at the time who granted that exemption was Sam Collins, who was the same guy who was the administrator who was the chief supervisor at Davis Bessie in the early 2000s, when his own inspectors said that the plant should be shut down to investigate a buildup of boric acid. And Sam Collins said, no, they're going to refuel in a couple of months. We'll let it keep going. And when those couple of months were up and they actually started refueling and shut down the plant, they found that the steel dome of the containment building at Davis Bessie had been corroded and eaten away to within 1/4 of an inch of breach of containment. And the NRC Inspector General's office excoriated Sam Collins, saying that he had put undue weight on the financials of the operator at the expense of public health and safety. So did they fire the guy? No. They made him the administrator of Region 1 with Indian Point in the most densely populated area of the United States.
Unbelievable. Judy Allen, you've been waiting patiently. What do you got to say about all this?
Well, I think Gary and Susan have, you know, hit the nail on the head. I just want to talk a little bit about the pipeline that Susan mentioned.
Let's bring this in now. So there's a proposal to put, you go ahead and do it, please.
Well, I went to a meeting last night in Yorktown. It was called a scoping meeting that was presented by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, which turns out not to be a federal agency. It describes itself as an independent agency that regulates the interstate transmission of electricity, natural gas, and oil. They were the ones who were doing this scoping session, and they were very articulate in saying that Spectra, the company that manages the Algonquin pipeline, has not even applied for this portion of it, the Atlantic Bridge project. It's all a little confusing because there's this huge project, but they segment it into different sections. So the part that goes right next to Indian Point, where the gas pipeline is expected to grow to 42 inches, is called the AIM project, and they weren't even considering that last night, although several of us did speak to it. basically what you have is going to be high-pressure fracked gas being transported from somewhere in the Midwest, I guess, to Boston, the Boston area, possibly for offshore, you know, it may not even be used in this country. I don't know. I don't think we have access to that information. But the point is that you expand those pipes to 42 inches wide, and you put them next to Indian Point, which is a mile away from the convergence of two earthquake faults in the Hudson River. And, you know, Robert Pollard was the one who said back in the 70s, Murphy's Law, if something can go wrong, it will go wrong. And so it's the idea that any corporation would be so irresponsible as to want to put 42-inch pipeline next to a nuclear power plant is, I believe, criminal insanity.
Okay. Criminal insanity, I think, is an understatement here. So let's make this clear. We have two reactors north of New York City. That's criminal insanity to start with. They are on the Hudson River. They have had numerous explosions in their transformer stations, including one this past week, and we're still not clear to the extent of it. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has allowed the plant to operate with clearly faulty and insufficient fire protection. Now, on top of all this, a company has come in, and they're proposing a 42-inch natural gas or fracked gas pipeline to go how close to these two reactors?
I think it's
within 500
feet away.
No. I believe it's 150 feet is at its closest.
To the reactors or to the edge of the plant?
I think the spent fuel.
Yeah, it's closer to the spent fuel pools, which, as we also know, are not protected by containment. They are housed in a warehouse type of building, and
they're overpacked. They're overpacked by 10 times what they were designed to be. So they're very, very susceptible to a fire. If there's a fire there and the water gets drained, it could spontaneously combust. They're highly overpacked.
You know, if this was a pitch session for a Hollywood disaster movie, we would be thrown out as being not credible.
And by the way, but just for anybody who loves numbers, here are the actual numbers. The spent fuel pools, the original design for the spent fuel pools at Indian Point 2 and Indian Point 3 were to have a maximum of 264 fuel assemblies each. They now have, between them, 1,345 in one of the pools and 1,375 in the other pool. This is insanity.
So it's 500%. Five times as many as they were originally.
More than five times what they were originally designed for. And that comes on top of the generic environmental impact statement that the NRC put out last year that said it doesn't matter how much nuclear waste is in these wet storage, even if we never come up with a big repository for the nuclear waste, it will be no problem. It's mind-boggling.
So first of all, I want to correct your. It's not a repository. It's a suppository. So
that's for all of us.
And there is no possibility of that. There is no place on the planet that is geologically safe to move this waste to. And even if there was to move it, is in itself a problem. It then moves this waste and has the potential of really, really damaging much greater area. You know, the fact that we keep making this waste without a plan of how to deal with it, and after 40 years of nuclear power, there is still no scientific method to deal with the waste. It's time that we stop making the waste.
That's a given. Now, which of the units had the transformer explode next to it? Unit 1 or Unit 2? Unit 3. Okay, so Unit 3 now. Is Unit 3 shut today?
Yes, it is. Shut down today.
And it will be for several more weeks.
So what are our chances of keeping it shut?
Well,
there's no that's a good idea. And there's listen, no one's lost power in this area at all. The fact of the matter is that there's a lot of false reports about how much power Entergy actually produces and how much it is given to the New York City area. First of all, they haven't been reporting it properly at all since Governor Pataki exempted them from reporting, which was about 10 years ago. But right now, in New York City is getting about 550 megawatts. That's the entire amount that they get from Indian Point. It's supposed to be going down to 350, rather than the 2,000 that they advertise they're supplying.
Why is it going down to 350 from whatever?
Well, the New York the New York Power Authority, which is the big institutional provider, they used to generate a lot of electricity. They used to own Indian Point 3. Con Edison used to own Indian Point 2. Around 2000, George Pataki deregulated the electricity market in New York State. That's when Entergy bought them as merchant factories, merchant plants from these utilities.
And explain this very quickly. You've used the term merchant plant. Explain to us the difference between a merchant plant and a utility plant.
A utility can get, when a utility is guaranteed a certain amount of profit when they operate, and consequently, whenever there are overruns, the ratepayers are on the hook. A merchant plant is a for-profit, publicly traded company, and theoretically, ratepayers are not, this is free market, and ratepayers are not on the hook for it. So that's among the reasons why Entergy is in such bad financial condition. It's the reason that they had to dump and shut Vermont Yankee, because they were losing money on that. They're losing money on the Fitzpatrick plant that's in upstate New York, I think near Utica. Indian Point is the only one in their Entergy Nuclear Northeast that's really making money and keeping that part of the company afloat. And towards that end, a couple of years ago, they tried to spin off all of their Entergy Nuclear Northeast into a separate company called Anexus, and the New York State Public Service Commission vetoed it, saying it was not in the best interests of the people of the state of New York, and it was all about trying to limit the liability to the parent corporation.
Okay, you guys are great. We're going to go without a break, if that's okay, folks in New York, and we're just going to skip right through here and talk further about this, because this is a life and death issue for about 20, 30, 40 million people. So let's take it from the top here. You got two reactors. They sell into the market. In other words, they're not guaranteed a return. They're owned by Entergy, which is a notoriously inefficient and obscenely incompetent operator of nuclear power plants, kind of a McDonald's operation for commercial reactors. They sell their power into a marketplace. It's not regulated. Of course, they don't have insurance, and in one case, they don't have, at Indian Point 2, they don't have a license. It's astounding me. Let's say that again. Indian Point 2 is operating without a license. I mean, what is the point of having a regulatory agency if these guys can continue to go without a license? Shouldn't they be shut down, for God's sakes?
Well,
you would think.
And you would also hope that since these relicensings are not extensions, they're actually new licenses, that the plant should have to live up to the current standards of where you could build a nuclear plant, but they don't.
I'm going to drive down the street here in L.A., and I'm going to leave my license at home. And the cop's going to pull me over, and I'm going to tell him my name is Indian Point 2, and I'm allowed to operate with. You think that'll
right.
work?
Yeah, so, right. Good luck with that.
Right. Also, on top of it, you couldn't drive your car without getting your annual inspection, right? And you're sicker for your annual inspection. They have refused to do a top-to-bottom inspection at Indian Point. And NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has refused to do it. Now, for example, we know Indian Point 2 spent fuel pool has been leaking since 2005 into the Hudson River. We know that it's leaking radioactive effluent every day into the Hudson River, and we know that it's coming from spent fuel 2 pool, but they don't know where the crack is. They haven't inspected it. They've exempted them from inspecting 60% of the pool. So they know it's leaking, and In fact, we started cleaning it up.
How do you inspect a pool? How do you you can't skin the, a scuba diver go down there and be dead in 2 minutes. How do you inspect a spent fuel pool?
Well, they have to put cameras down there, and they have to. They're claiming they can't inspect it because it's built into bedrock. But you know what? Then they have to empty it. Then they have to stop making them fuel, empty it, put all the fuel into dry cast storage, and find the leak before instead of continuing to put waste in it. And know that it's leaking into the Hudson River. I mean, if it was a gas station, they would require you to do that. If you had a leaking tank at a gas station, they would actually require you to shut down your business, rip up the tanks, do all the retrofitting and do the whole cleanup, and then you would be allowed to operate again. But no, Indian Point's exempt from any kind of normal functioning of business.
How do we know that it's leaking?
Because there's about the size of the New York City reservoir. There's effluent underneath Indian Point, and it was found to be leaking by accident. A contractor was working there, and he saw a wet spot at the corner of the spent fuel pool, and they tested it, and it was highly radioactive. And since that time, they have test wells now around there, and they have found it's continuing to leak. In fact, last March, they found a new leak, and actually the day before this explosion on Friday, last Friday, it's been not greatly reported because, of course, the explosion happened on Saturday, but they found another steam leak, which means that there's a leak in the piping underground and the radioactive side is leaking. And so last March, when they found this new leak under Indian Point, our citizen science monitoring project that we have going at the same time found an enormous spike in the air of radioactive releases. Now, they didn't report that leak in March until June at their annual assessment meeting, and that's how we even realized what was going on, why there was that spike at the time in March.
We're talking with Susan, Gary, and Judy of the Indian Point, various Indian Point coalitions and organizations that are dealing with these insane reactors north of New York City, along the Hudson River, Indian Point 2 and Indian Point 3. I want to mention very quickly my good friend Carl Grossman, the great journalist, has a piece up about this at Counterpunch. And I'll be putting up a piece about this in the next few days at EcoWatch. So you'll have more detail. These are three of the great experts on this. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. Judy Allen, can you tell us what we would expect, what kinds of impacts would come from a major Fukushima-level catastrophe at Indian Point, which is obviously way more likely than anyone ever dreamed?
Sure. Well, the first thing that you can expect is that the NRC and Entergy, and I'm not sure about the local police and sheriff, all those agencies will tell you that everything is under control and you don't need to worry and the public has not been affected.
Pre-recorded, right? When the plants blow up,
yeah,
all they do is push the button and it says there's no
right.
need to worry.
And this is pervasive throughout the industry worldwide. It's happening in Japan, as you know, probably in Ukraine. They didn't discover Chernobyl until the radiation drifted over Sweden or one of the European countries. They deny until the moment that they can't deny anymore.
And then we know there was a great quote, by the way. People want to Google this. There was a great quote from Jacques Cousteau, the wonderful undersea, underwater environmentalist, who said basically what you just said, I don't know, 30 years ago, saying that, the first thing you expect in a major disaster is that these clowns will come forward and say there's no problem. So now, Judy, tell us about the problem.
Well, if there's any sort of let me just say at this point that one of the reasons that the Algonquin pipeline is such a gift to us, and we can see this weekend when the oil spilled into the Hudson, you can't see, smell, or taste radiation, but you can see an oil slick. So I just want to say that elected officials who have never said anything about Indian Point except that it's perfectly safe and they're perfectly confident, they have come out of the woodwork to try to prevent the Algonquin pipeline, because you can see fire You can see an oil slick on the Hudson. You cannot deny that. So after the denial, if there were a disaster at Indian Point, I would say your first best bet is to contact those of us who have Geiger counters at home and who are monitoring the radiation. And at a certain point, the word would get around. But, of course, even if the word does get around, the place is impossible to evacuate. We have one throughway. We have the Taconic Parkway. But we don't have any major evacuation routes. If you remember Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, where people could escape on I-10 and other large roads, we don't have those. All we have are just plain country roads.
We also have a mountain range that you can't go through. There's very limited access out of. It's called the Ramapo Mountain Range, and it's part of the Appalachian Trail, and it really ties the New York metropolitan area in. And so to evacuate 20 million people on, you know, a three lanes each direction highway, it will take days.
Since we're talking about evacuation, Gary, tell us exactly what will the people of the region be trying to evacuate from if and when Indian Point Units 2 and or 3 blow up?
Well, you know, there'll be total pandemonium, and here's a little anecdote. In 2002, former Governor George Pataki, was running for his last term in office. Indian Point, in light of 2001, had become a big wedge issue. So he hired James Lee Witt and Associates. James Lee Witt was Bill Clinton's head of FEMA for 8 years. He oversaw the bombing of the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. He oversaw the flooding of the Mississippi River. He oversaw hurricanes in Florida. And he was hired by Pataki to evaluate the emergency plans for both Indian Point and the Millstone plant that's up in Connecticut, but would cover part of the New York metropolitan area. He put out the report didn't come out until after Election Day. What a surprise. And he put out a 250-page report with a 250-page appendix that said this plan cannot possibly work under any circumstances, and it would be much worse if the release of radiation was larger or faster than the design basis. So what you would have is total pandemonium. You would have people stuck in traffic jams, endless traffic jams. And I will say that James Lee Witt put out the report on a Friday in July. The famous Michael Brown of "You're doing a heck of a job, Brownie," when they couldn't evacuate New Orleans, he approved, as the head of FEMA, he approved the evacuation plan. And on that very Friday, a single accident on the George Washington Bridge in morning rush hour froze every major roadway in both Rockland County and Westchester for the entire day. Whenever I talk about that, I tell people to imagine yourself in that traffic jam, and now you're hearing the siren. It would be there would be deaths. There would be people would be killing themselves to try and be killing each other to try and get away.
Okay, so Susan,
so the question is, how do we shut this thing down? Right?
Before we get to that question, I want you to tell us exactly what it is that people will be evacuating from. Why would we be so concerned about radiation coming from Indian Points 2 and 3?
We have 18,000 tons of high-level radioactive waste sitting. I actually think it's more now.
2,700 tons.
2,700 tons of high-level radioactive waste that, if there is an explosion fire at Indian Point that can't be controlled, will be released into the atmosphere, into the Hudson River. They predict it would create a steam cloud that would, you know, basically destroy the entire New York City metropolitan area. And people have to understand, this would not be an evacuation like a hurricane evacuation or a tornado evacuation, where, yes, your house may be ruined, but you can actually come back to your property and rebuild. This is an evacuation that you would never be able to come back for hundreds and hundreds of years. You'd have to leave, and it would bankrupt the entire country.
It would actually bankrupt the United States. So it's an insanity. As an American, as a patriot who cares about my nation, it's insane that this plant is allowed to operate any longer. And that, so, you know, what I've been focusing my energies on is trying to figure out how we actually get this thing shut down.
One last question before you go there, and I definitely want to go there. How many people would die and how many people would be injured if and when Indian Points 2 and or 3 blow up?
Well, there are different studies, and the short-term injuries, they're saying, I've read different studies, so, you know, nobody could predict exactly, but I believe it's something like 50,000 in short-term, but then you have the cancers and the illnesses that come about, and one of the big things that people really need to think about and understand is there's now tons of evidence and studies that have been done that show that women are 50% more likely to get cancer than the average American man that they use the standard dose. And children are at least 7 to 10 times more likely in their lifetime to get cancer from the same dose that the average American man, which is the acceptable standard. So
okay,
we're talking about generations.
So I'm going to venture a guess here that the number of people that would die as a result of an explosion at either of these reactions, I got to move inside. There's another helicopter here. Here we go. So the number of people that would die as a result of an explosion at either reactor at Indian Point is essentially incalculable. You can't
exactly.
even begin, and you certainly can't even begin to calculate the property damage. We're looking here at an apocalyptic event.
Well, we did calculate the property damage. We did a property, just the property, forget about life, forget about business. We just looked at the property value of the 50-mile radius around Indian Point. Now, that encompasses four states because there's Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York. And it turns out that just property is $8.5
trillion.
That's what we're talking about.
Trillion. Here's the kicker. You're ready for this. How much of that is Entergy liable for?
$2 billion, I think.
No, $12 billion.
Whole industry liability is now capped at $17 billion.
Well,
it's 0.01% of property value.
Not even close. I'll tell you the answer. Like a lawyer, don't ask a question, you don't know the answer. The answer is that the federal limit is $12.5 billion, but it's shared by all nuclear utilities. So Entergy's share of that is minuscule. So the reality is we're talking about enough of property damage to destroy the global economy, essentially, and we're also talking about a death toll that's incalculable. So now let's move ahead. Susan Shapiro, tell us, how do we shut this damn thing? Hello?
Susan?
Well, here we go. We lost her at the exact wrong moment. Gary, tell us, how do we shut this thing?
Well, you know, that's very unclear. We are very lucky to have New York State's government. They have gone after Entergy. Our governor, Andrew Cuomo, has been trying to get the plant shut since he was the attorney general of the state. Our current attorney general, Eric Schneiderman, the only way that I am firmly convinced that the NRC will never, ever shut a nuclear plant unless it actually has exploded and is leaching radiation through the entire world.
I want to jump in with a detail here. I think that our listeners should know, as I'm sure you do, that the funding for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which allegedly is tasked with regulating these reactors, comes from revenues generated by the reactors themselves.
That's right, 90% of their budget.
So for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to shut a reactor means that they are actually cutting into their own budget. I don't think that's going to happen.
Right. It's a structural conflict of interest. And, you know, just recently, one of the NRC commissioners, Magwood, stayed on the commission even after he had accepted a position, a post NRC position in the industry, but he stayed on the NRC as a deciding member of all sorts of regulations.
So they let him do that.
They let him do that. Yeah. But the levers, I believe, that we can, right now, the lever that New York State has to shut this plant down is the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, which is an arm of the EPA, has already denied Indian Point a discharge and water use permit of the Hudson River for prior violations of discharging radioactive waste, thermal pollution, and fish kills. And Entergy has appealed that this year the final throes of that appeal will be happening. And we need to ask Governor Cuomo, everyone who's listening to this, call Governor Cuomo and tell him to make sure the DEC doesn't back down from this order, because now once again they're leaking into the Hudson River. The last transformer explosion caused PCBs to leak into the Hudson River, and there was a consent order entered into with Entergy, and they have violated that consent order. They're not even living up to the settlement. So it's time for
another one of those ironies. Here we have all these decades of very high profile attempts to clean up the PCBs that were dumped into the Hudson River by General Electric, and then the nuclear plant turns around and dumps more PCBs into the river. It's a
sad situation.
Well, let me ask you real quickly. Entergy, you say, appealed the what is the agency, DEC, what's that stand for?
The Department of Environmental Conservation. Other states call it DEPs.
Who did they appeal? Where did they go with their appeal?
They appeal it within the agency. It's appealed within the agency, this is the final appeal that they're in the middle of right now.
Will they then go to the civil courts?
I don't know if they can, because this whole issue has already gone to the Supreme Court and has come back down. The issue that was raised to the Supreme Court was costs need to be considered, and the Supreme Court basically said, cost may be considered, but the standard of protection has to be met. So the DEC.
This is the U.S. Supreme Court?
Yes, the U.S. Supreme Court.
Were Scalia and Thomas on vacation when they wrote this issue?
Maybe. Maybe they weren't really paying attention. But it wasn't directly an Indian Point issue. It was a dam scammer. It's another conventional plant on the Hudson River, fossil fuel plant, that the decision was done for, but it applies nonetheless. And so we need the DEC to stand strong. And then the other thing that we need to do, I really truly believe this, is we need to go after FEMA. FEMA should not be approving every year evacuation plans that all the counties know don't work. All the elected officials, all the people in this region know the evacuation plans don't work. And FEMA every year, despite the knowledge that they can't evacuate this area, and the local people on the ground say it can't be evacuated, the state people say it can't be evacuated, they go ahead and approve an evacuation plan based on a tabletop drill, like based on playing a game of evacuation. They say, oh, yeah, it's fine. It's time that FEMA has to be held accountable for the protection of the public, because we know the NRC will not be. And FEMA
Have the surrounding towns and counties passed resolutions against this evacuation plan?
Yes, over after 9/11, I think every county in the region did.
Well, after the James Lee Witt report came out in 2003, all of the counties involved in the evacuation plan did not sign off that it was adequate, and neither did New York State overall. But it doesn't matter to the NRC, and it doesn't matter to Entergy.
Well, it's not NRC. The NRC waits for FEMA to sign off, and the day FEMA signs off, the NRC signs off. That's what they say. They say it's not our business; it's FEMA's business. So let's make it FEMA's business and tell FEMA they cannot put us at risk. They cannot leave us, all of the people in the Hudson Valley, at risk, and New York City and the economy of the United States at risk.
So, are these people on FEMA? Are they appointed by Obama?
Yes.
And it's his appointees that are allowing this insanity
yes.
to continue?
At this point, yes. Well, it's every president, whichever president you had, they continue to allow it to happen.
The worst thing that's
happening, Harvey, is that during these superstorms, when they know there's going to be a loss of off-site power, when they know there's going to be hot shutdown, the most dangerous way to shut down the plant, when the public transportation systems and the roads are closed, when you would be fined if you drove on the road, they're not allowed to drive. They allow these plants to continue operating during this time when we all know the plants are going to go through the most dangerous kind of hot shutdown. And if there's a failure during that time, nobody could evacuate. The roads, after Superstorm Sandy, there were 2 weeks where people couldn't even move around this area. Trees were down, wires were down.
There was no
electricity. Right.
There was no electricity. And Gary, what were you about to say?
Well, I just want to remind everybody that while Barack Obama has done some good things, when he was the senator from the state of Illinois, his biggest campaign contributor was the Exelon Corporation, which owns the most nuclear plants in the country. So he's always been pro-nuclear. He's looked for loan guarantee legislation that luckily we were able to beat down. But he's a pro-nuke guy.
He did sign off on the loan guarantees that allowed the two reactors to proceed at Vogtle in Georgia. So that's
right.
That's not cool. So we want to. Is there more that Andrew Cuomo? We're down our last 8 minutes here. Is there more that Andrew Cuomo could be doing to shut these two reactors?
The only lever the state has is the use of the Hudson River, the water use permit. And so we've moved really far along on that, and Cuomo needs to stand firm on that. And they will not be allowed to operate. They can't get a new license without the use of the Hudson River. And it's time for the state to do that and not wait for the NRC to drag out this relicensing process and allowing a nuclear plant to operate without a license, because the relicensing process is dragging on. The state needs to take action. There's another leak. It's time for them to say, you know what, we're not negotiating with you anymore. You are a danger to our community. You're a danger to the Hudson River. You're a danger to the resources of New York State.
And, Harvey, here's a really funny one. In 2003, Entergy joined with Riverkeeper and the Scenic Hudson when the EPA suggested that they should use wedge wire which is another big sucking in system, but it has better screening. The EPA said that was an alternative to what they currently have, and Entergy joined with environmental agencies to say that wedge wire was never designed for a system that pulled in more than 100 million gallons of water a day. But Indian Point sucks in $2.5 billion gallons a day, and now Entergy is saying they would rather use wedge wire than have to build this closed-cycle cooling.
Wedge wire doesn't solve the problem.
Right. Now, we talked about this. We had a show on Diablo Canyon, the California reactors, and they're looking at the same water issue, sort of. And, of course, this was an issue at Oyster Creek. Now, the Oyster Creek reactors in New Jersey, the one reactor at Oyster Creek will shut on a date certain, allegedly, because they were told that they would have to build cooling towers, and they decided not to.
Unless Chris Christie changes it, you know.
But allegedly the state could force Indian Point to build cooling towers. We presume that because of the expense, they wouldn't do it. They did turn around and try and cut a deal with the state or the feds to operate a certain period of time. And then when the time ran out, they would refuse to shut and go back to court and do whatever they want to do. So I assume that this issue is common to Diablo Canyon, the two reactors there, to Oyster Creek. To the two at Indian Point, the idea that once through cooling doesn't work because it kills the rivers and the ocean, and you have to build cooling towers, then the question is, who pays for the cooling towers? Is that more or less a decent summary?
Yeah, there's no question about who would pay for it. Entergy would. They are a publicly traded corporation, and it would be, you know, they would have to live up to this. And by the way, they position this as if they were blindsided with this, but in fact, the original license that was issued by the AEC, the Atomic Energy Commission, which was the predecessor of NRC, had an addendum in the first licensing that said you should be building closed cycle cooling to mitigate the fish kill and the damage that you will do to the Hudson River. So more than 40 years ago, they knew they were supposed to do this, and nobody ever did, and the state never pursued it.
And Entergy bought the plant knowing this had to happen. They took ownership on 9/11. The fateful 9/11 was the day Entergy took ownership. So when they bought the plant, they knew they were required to put in closed cycle cooling. It's standard practice in all electrical plants. you know, this is just a very old plant that didn't build it at the time. That's the only reason. It's such a, it's so old.
Unbelievable. We're down to our last couple of minutes. Judy Allen, do you want to say something before we move on?
Well, I would just encourage, since Susan thought that it was important to contact Governor Cuomo, I just wanted to supply a phone number for your listeners in New York State. Governor Cuomo's office is 518-474-8390. And, of course, you can find a contact for him online as well. But, yeah, I encourage New York State to continue to protect our health and safety, because we already know that the NRC is not going to do it, and we know that Entergy doesn't care. All they care about is their bottom line.
Well, they are a corporation. They are the cancer that's killing the earth. All corporations care about money and not about people, even though they've been granted human privileges. Gary, do you want to pipe in with a last couple of words here? We're down to our last 3 or 4 minutes.
I think we've said quite a bit, and you know, again, this, you know, in any responsible business, when you are making policies that might carry risk, you do an upside benefit versus downside risk potential evaluation, and when the downside is a radiation release in the New York metropolitan area, it makes the upside benefit absolutely irrelevant.
Unless you're a corporation that's not liable for any of the damage you do, then the whole equation goes crazy. Thank you both very much. Susan Hito Shapiro, the last words are for you.
The one thing I would say is people not only from New York State, but from all around the country should call Governor Cuomo. He's interested in national politics, and this is a national issue. It's not just a New York State issue.
Well, let's tell people exactly what do we want to tell the governor to do, and what can individuals do beyond the governor to get this thing shut down?
Well, they should tell the governor that they want the DEC the New York State not to allow Entergy to use the Hudson River to cool Indian Point. And they want Indian Point shut down. And the other thing they can do is they can participate in citizen science monitoring campaigns, get a Geiger counter, go to radiation.org and join our citizen science monitoring campaign so we actually know what the radiation is out there, and go to ipsec.org. There's a lot of information on our website that you could get involved in. And we need people to come out. There's a May 20th hearing in Tarrytown, another NRC hearing, so anyone in the New York area who wants to come to that, please show up. The more, the better.
You guys have been great. Thank you so much. Here's Pete Seeger, New Yorker himself, who worked decades to shut Indian Point. We'll see you next week on the Solartopia Green Power Wellness.
We needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Solartopia, don't you know?